Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
It's that time of the year. It's basketball season. A lot of times Chris and I are out, and we are very fortunate to have Darren College in studio to fill in. I know Darren has filled in for me a couple of times heading to football games. Chris heading to the basketball game on Thursday in South Carolina. We'll check in with him tomorrow, get a preview of the tournament. Darren College, pleasure to see you and work with you here today.
We'll see if you're fortunate. We'll see how this 2 hours goes before we decide if we're fortunate enough to have me here yet.
Well, let's talk about the game. You've been involved in a lot of games as a player, both in the professional and the collegiate level.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like playing in one of those games where one team comes back from such a huge, huge deficit?
It's special. It's tough. I think the one that I had the closest to this was when I was a Green Bay Packer. We traveled to Arizona while they were still with Kurt Warner. And we had a wild card game out there, and we had a back and forth like this. They came out early, got a huge lead on us, and we battled back, and Aaron Rodgers, I remember him saying in the huddle, man, we're going to have to score 40 points. Mm-hmm. And we got to it, got to overtime, ended up having to score 50 to win, and we actually had a turnover, and Arizona was the one that ended up being victorious. So the opposite happened. At the very end, we were the team storming back, didn't make the play, couldn't win the game, and Boise State instead found the way to win.
Now, if you look at the two overtime games the Broncos have had this year, the Washington State game, they were ahead. Mm-hmm. Washington State came back and won. Opposite here, Colorado State was ahead, Boise State came back and won. Do you think the team that's down, some games it's back and forth and it's really close, and maybe somebody's ahead by seven, but let's say somebody comes from way behind to force overtime, do you think they win more often, or do you think the team that blew the lead ends up getting it back?
You tend to win those games more often than not. I think momentum is so important in any sport that you look at. Momentum's huge, but in football it seems like it's more palpable than anyone else. Like, when you feel momentum change in a game, it's something that you can touch. You can reach out there and you can see the other team begin to get deflated, and you can see yourself rise, and you're at the end of a game and you're the team that's allowed a team to come back like that. You're just trying to score. I mean, I think the Patriots and the Falcons last year is the one that everybody falls back on. You saw a team there that was trying to do the bare minimum to try to just win the game. We've got to make the next play to win the game. Or, you know, you look at a Boise State or a New England, that situation where we're going to throw it all against the wall and see what sticks. And like, we're just going to go for the gusto, and we're going to make it happen. And that's what they did. And, you know, when you play that tight at the end of the game, just trying to win, usually you have the biggest problem.
One of the great things about broadcasting the game is you can see what you want to see, not what the telecast shows you. And watching the sideline in the first half when Colorado State had the 25-point lead, their guys looked like they were on their toes, moving around. Yeah. They were happy. Boise State, a little more subdued. At halftime, a lot of folks left for Colorado State because it was getting late.
Yep.
It seemed like a lot of the energy went out. Washington State, just the opposite. Their crowd stayed so that when they made their comeback, they were there to help them. But then, and you got to the third quarter after those couple of touchdowns, you could tell who was ahead or who was on the rise just by looking at the sidelines. You didn't have to watch the play, what Boise State sidelines look like and what Colorado State sidelines look like.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I kind of think it's similar to like a boxer, you know, in the beginning, or a boxer who's got the leader controlling a match. He's bouncing around on his toes. He's moving around the ring really, really well. And the other guy's kind of the beat down guy, moving slowly, kind of trapped against the ropes. And then you see that switch get made, and all of a sudden you get a lot tighter on that Colorado State side. You start to see the guys kind of like, okay, we're not in a great place. We got to figure it out. And then, you know, you have the turnovers and they score and they think they've got it again. It kind of goes back and forth. But you take away that crowd factor. You take away that crowd noise and that advantage that it gives you when you have a lead in a game. That can be all the difference. You know, Boise State trying to come back at WSU against that crowd noise, they've got another challenge. They were able to wipe that away at Colorado State and say, we can go back to our normal game plan. We can run our normal stuff. We can run normal cadences. And that little bit right there is usually enough. You can feel that crowd change on you. And that can be a deciding factor in a lot of games.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk here on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Darren College sitting in today for Chris Lewis. Darren, of course, offensive lineman at Boise State. The Packers, the Dolphins, the Cardinals. I got everybody?
I think that's everybody. Thank
North
God.
Pole?
I you know, I wanted to play in Europe. I went over and traveled in Europe. I almost joined an Italian team while I was over there just for the experience. Uh-huh. So I could have added one more team to that list.
What was the name of that team?
I think it was...
They have some weird names over
Well,
there.
It was in Bolzano, and I believe they were the Bolzano... I can't remember anymore. I don't know. It was one of the most beautiful cities I ever saw, and I think they were going to pay me like $18 to play, but they would have gave me a visa to hang out for a whole football season. I think it would have been kind of cool.
Brian Baldinger, do you know him? Works for Fox.
No, I don't.
Brian did 1 year on Fox in Europe. I think maybe it was 2 years.
Really?
He said it was the best gig he ever had because he was paid to announce.
Yeah.
He was the color guy. Went around to all the different cities in Europe, and he said they didn't pay him. They paid him to stay over there because it was easier and cheaper to stay over there than it was to come back.
So, yeah, absolutely.
To me, that would be an ultimate gig.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think. And I was like, you know, if they'd let me kind of pick my position and come on for 1 year, I'll be one of the two Americans they were allowed to have on the team.
When you have a win like that, the Boise State has, it's a euphoric win.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like the next week in practice? Is it tough to get back up? Do you use it as a springboard? Do you keep flying? Is this a game that the team's going to just take off from here? Do you have to guard against, you know, wow, that was such a great game and you're on such a high and then there's a little bit of a letdown?
Yeah, I think that you're always in danger of that. I think that you get to you've given so much physically and mentally to a game like that that it's hard. Sometimes you're going to come down from that and not know how to recover in that big of a win. I think the advantage with this team is that they have Air Force next. And this is a game that no matter guys admit it or not has been circled on the calendar for every single one of these players for this entire year. There's guys on this team that have never beat this team. So they've got it circled. So I believe that guys are going to be able to come up back up for this next game. But you look at games like the one against Colorado State and you say that can be a season definer. Mm-hmm. That can be a career definer for the right kind of guy. And that's something you should be able to reach back down and say, okay, we can do that if we have to do that. We always have it in the back of our pocket, but we have to be able to put that away and get ready for the next game. But there's always the fear of a lull after that. But that usually happens when you play a team after that that you're already expected to beat. That's not mm-hmm. going to be as much of a challenge. I think the advantage with Air Force coming up is that they're not expected to win. This is a challenge. This is a game they haven't beat somebody. They may be ahead in the Vegas odds, but in their own hearts, they know that this is a real challenge next week.
Now, when you play football, and I think of Boise State, you probably were on the long end. I can't think that anybody beat you 2 years in a row playing here.
I only lost to Fresno State.
Only one game?
Only one conference game.
So pretty darn good.
Not bad.
With the Packers, was there anybody that had your number like this with Air Force against Boise? Or maybe somebody that you had their number that whatever you guys threw out on the field that you'd always win?
Well, when I was in the North, we had the Detroit Lions, which everybody had the Detroit Lions number. They, you know, them and the Cleveland Browns were kind of those guys. But inside our division, that was kind of it. When I got to Arizona, the team that I felt like sometimes we had more talent in, but always found a way to beat us was Seattle. Mm-hmm. You know, when they really started to make their turnaround, when they became a different team, we at Arizona weren't up to that speed yet. We had the right guys. We had the talent in the room. But it always felt like they always found a way to have a ball bounce their direction. And sometimes they would win by 7, and sometimes they'd win by 40, and we couldn't figure it out. You know, we had the guys to do it, but they kind of checked our number. So I've been on both sides of that fence, mm-hmm. and I'll tell you what, being on the side where you got somebody else's number is always much better.
It's a different team every year, though. You'd think every game would be its own chapter, but sometimes just because somebody has a certain jersey, it seems like it does make a difference.
Yeah, it does make a difference. Certain guys wear a certain jersey. I knew it when we played here at Boise State. You know, we didn't lose home games when we were here. You know, teams would come in here and they felt like they were down 7 or 10 points right when they came through the door. In Green Bay, we felt like we had that same advantage. When people came into Lambeau Field, the kind of team we were, that guys walked in, they were down 7 points. They already mm-hmm. knew that, you know, coming out before kickoff. And sometimes it doesn't matter who's across from you. It just matters that lore, that uniform, or that coach. You know, you face a guy like Bill Belichick, you knew mentally you were probably already a step or two behind, whether it was true or not. You just felt that way when you walked out on the field.
So what do you think Air Force thinks? We've always talked about everything from the Boise State perspective, and coming up at 2:15 today, we'll talk with one of their broadcasters, Jesse Kurtz. And I want to ask him, what do they think? I mean, do you think they think that, well, we've got Boise State's number, we know how to handle them, we know how to play them?
I don't think any one of them will actually admit that. I think they're a stronger mental team than that. You look at a team like Air Force and you kind of expect a certain type of player, a certain type of character to come out of a program like that. But I guarantee they don't care that they're 4-6. Mm-hmm. They're walking this game knowing what the last couple of years has looked like. They know that they've had the answers. They know that they can come into this place and win. They will come in with no fear. They're going to come in throwing punches, expecting to win a game. And with their season done, for all intents and purposes, and our season still in front of us with a championship possibility to be there, they're going to come in as the spoiler. They're mm-hmm. going to come in with that mentality like, all right, we may not have got what we want, but we're going to make sure you don't get what you want.
And I'm sure that happens sometimes when you were with the Packers. That you really had to guard against that, because how many times were you in that catbird seat where you get to games in December And you're facing, you mentioned the Lions. That's probably one. You probably had others. The Bears, you probably played a lot late that probably were in a position where they were out.
Oh, absolutely. I've been on the side where you're the team hoping not to get upset. You've got championship mentality out there, and you're trying to win. And you face a team like Detroit or maybe Minnesota at the end of the season who's only going to make 500. They know they're going home in a couple weeks, and they're going to be on the couch. And they're out there to hurt you. They're out there to physically dominate you. They're going to try to put you in the ground, and they're going to try to give you a loss. They know you might be going to the playoffs. They're going to try to make sure that you get knocked out early. And I've been the guy on the other side who's trying to ruin somebody else's playoff run to make sure that I'm sending them home in December, because I'm mad I'm going home in December.
So you think most teams, most players, when they're out of the race in the NFL in December, they're still giving the full effort against somebody that's still there?
I would guess that there's probably a 70% of the population in the NFL still trying to do that. Most of those guys are trying to earn a job. The guys that usually kind of cash it in are the guys who've made a lot of money or have a big contract coming up next year, don't want to get hurt, want to take care of themselves, get through the last two games and get to free agency. There's a few guys out there taking care of themselves, but there's a lot of guys out there playing that role of, all right, I'm going to go out and spoil somebody else's season. Like, my season didn't end the way I hoped. I'm going to make sure somebody else's doesn't. There's some bitterness. Don't worry.
I've also always felt watching games that if you're two teams that are out of the race, whether this be baseball, the NBA, NFL, whatever the sport is at the end of the season, if you want to play your younger guys and you want to experiment, whatever, fine.
Yeah.
But I would hope that if I was needing somebody else to lose, I would hope that the team that was out of the race would play their main players against the team that I needed to have lose.
Yeah, I've absolutely been in that situation. You know, when I was with Green Bay, we were in a situation where the Bears were kind of right in that mix with us. They had we had split our games against each other. We'd won at home, they'd won at home, and you know, you're looking at their last part of the schedule, and you're saying, all right, here's the three teams they've got, here's the three teams we've got. You know, we need to win two out of those three to put ourselves in a good situation, and it'd be nice if they only won one. So who they got left? And I'm looking at those teams going, are those teams guys making runs to playoffs? Are those guys – I want to see those guys being guys that are just outside the playoffs trying to get themselves in. I don't want to see them being a Patriots on that roster who might be willing to give up their Week 16 game because they're trying to protect Tom, you know, going into the playoffs. You know, I want to see guys – on the end of that schedule that are hungry, that are trying to make their way in the playoffs, that are willing to be the kind of the upset for us.
This Friday from 1 to 3, Idaho Sports Talk with me and Tom Scott, who will be filling in for Chris on Friday. We'll be out at the Chicago Connection in Nampa on Franklin. That's across from the College of Western Idaho in the front of the Ford Idaho Center. Show up in person to win one of five pairs of Bronco tickets to see Air Force and Boise State on Saturday. Don't be late. The Chicago Connection Pizza in Nampa near the Ford Idaho Center with Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, last home game of the regular season. It's senior day for Boise State. Meridian's Mason Hampton is one of 14 for the Broncos. He's a two-year starter, great student. We'll ask him what's the difference for a center when you have two quarterbacks shuttling in and out. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Boise State has had a lot of success getting players from Idaho and getting them to perform at a high level. One of those is starting center Mason Hampton. He's from Meridian High School, been the starting center for the last two seasons, also an outstanding student, 3.97 grade point average in accounting. Mason joins us today, and here's our conversation with the Bronco center. Mason, before we start talking football, you had a very nice honor bestowed upon you in the past week or so, and that is getting on the finalist list for the Campbell Trophy. Also includes an $18,000 scholarship for grad studies. Congratulations. What does that mean to you?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I wish it was $85,000. So, yeah, it's $18,000, but no, it'll really help me out. You know, I wanted to get my master's in accounting, so that will help me out to pay for that and be able to get a job while I do that. So it's a really good honor for me and on the school as well.
So talk about the football game against Colorado State. What was it like playing in a game where you were so far behind, coming back and winning the game? Was it fun to play?
It was a lot of fun to play, and it was a real emotional game. You know, we came in at halftime, and, you know, we just said, you know, we got to compete. Coach Arson told us, you know, it doesn't matter what the score is, you just got to compete every down, every play, and treat every play like it's its own game itself. So we just said, you know, we got to chip away at this lead they have and come out the first couple minutes, put some big scores and get the momentum going in our way, and it was just a fun game to be a part of.
I've been in games like that. I think the most important thing is always kind of how my quarterback reacts. How was your quarterback reacting right there in the huddle during that game?
He's a leader. Both him and Montel. We threw that pick at the last couple minutes left. You know, nobody came out on the sideline and sulked or thought we were going to lose that game. We saw it as another challenge inside the game itself to get back. And obviously, Brett responded real well to it.
How have you guys been able to overcome some little nicks and people missing some games? I know you missed a game. Different guys missed a game. Cavedo missed the game. It was Larson that was in for him. And is it difficult when you have different guys, different games, having to play different spots?
You know, it is difficult, but every team is going through the same thing right now. And you know, the motto is the next guy's got to carry the torch. So, I mean, on our team, we have a lot of tough guys, a lot of guys that are playing through some injuries. But, you know, we all know it has to be done, and next guy has to carry the flag.
You guys talk about, you know, carrying the flag, moving on to the next guy. At the beginning of the season, you guys obviously took a lot of heat. You're that kind of room. That's offensive line. That's what it comes down to. You guys have now turned around and became one of the strengths on this team. What's Brad Bedell brought to that room, and, you know, what has Nate Potter brought to that room to kind of bring you guys up?
You know, both those guys, they didn't change anything from when we were being, you know, we've been criticized, and now when people are saying we're doing pretty well, which didn't change anything. We didn't change our practice. We just kind of realized that, you know, this team is going to go as we go. We have to have a sense of urgency about ourselves. And so we kept doing what we were doing, kept grinding away, and it ended up working out.
You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk. Bob Beeler along with Darren College today. We're visiting with Boise State senior center Mason Hampton. Well, Mason, looking at the results in the last, say, six games and the six-game winning streak, you guys are obviously playing much better. How are you better? I mean, I'm watching. It looks like the holes are better. It looks like you're protecting the quarterback. But maybe how and why are things working out?
Well, you know, I mean, it's not just the offensive line either. I mean, on every one of our run plays, there's usually a tight end blocking. In every one of our big run plays, there's receivers blocking down the field. You know, Alex and Wolfen are making us right when we miss those blocks. So it's really a team and offensive effort to get the run game going.
Mason, we've talked about it, you know, and every week it comes up here. We've got to talk about it. I want to hear from you. How are you feeling about playing behind a two-quarterback system? I know I had to do it only once or twice in a game, but to see a stint in a run like this, you know, rotating those guys out in and out of series, how is that handled by the offensive line?
It's handled real well. You know, we don't know when they're coming in or coming out. So we just get into the huddle, see who's there. And then we react. Sometimes Montel's in and he's not playing quarterback, or sometimes Brendan and he's not playing quarterback. So we have trust in both those guys that they're going to go out and get it done.
Now, Mason, you're the center. Do they like the ball snapped differently, either under center or in the shotgun? You got to put the ball in a different spot for either one of them?
No, not really. I mean, under center, it's a little different, but nothing too big.
As we look at the game coming up with Air Force, Mason, 3 years in a row, the Falcons have got the better of us. Thoughts on playing the Falcons? What needs to be different this week?
You know, it's really just our preparation. It has to be the best we've done all week, especially with guys that are, you know, banged up, that can't go as hard in practice. They need to get those mental reps, get those film reps. I mean, obviously we know last 3 years we haven't got it done. Ever since I've been playing, we haven't gotten it done. So there's a big emphasis on this week.
For most guys, they're going to say that there's no locker board material. You guys need to give the reporters the reporter kind of answers and the straight football answers. But you can tell me honestly, you guys have to have this game circled on the calendar, don't you?
Of course, yeah. I mean, past 3 years, it's been a big game for us. We need to get it done.
More on the line this year with, if you get the win, you win the division, senior day. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of things coming together for this week.
Yeah, I mean, it's all just more motivation to play harder. But honestly, all the motivation we need is that we're playing Air Force this week.
So what do you think the line needs to do? Is this group usually a little smaller? Are they quicker than some of the other teams you face on the defensive side of the ball?
You know, you think they're smaller, but really they're not. Most of them are bigger than me, to be honest. I'm a pretty small kid. But, no, they stack the box. They bring a lot of pressure, and they disguise it really well. So it's up to us to recognize that pressure and block and make those open holes even when they got extra guys in there.
Mason, if I'm watching that defense play this week and I'm watching the guys I need to see you dominate, who's the two guys on that defense right now that you guys have circled as the difference maker on their defense?
Well, their Mike Backer is coming back, and he kind of sets the scheme for them. That and their safeties are kind of the guys that they'd like to bring on the pressure. So, I mean, really they're a bunch of guys that they try hard, and they try hard and they execute well and they perform. And they're part of a thing that's bigger than themselves. So, I mean, I have a ton of respect for them. And, yeah, that's it.
Mason, as we finish up, senior day could be the last home game on the blue for you. Maybe there'll be a championship game that'll be here. But you've been a starter the last two seasons at Boise State at center. Thoughts on what the career for you has been like and how it's been and maybe what you expected when you first got here?
Yeah, I mean, coming in as a walk-on, I couldn't have ever expected to have it end like this. It's been an awesome 4.5-5 years, and I'm just excited to go into a new chapter in my life, but also to kind of put a close to this on the way that I've always wanted to do it and with the opportunity that we have this year.
Thanks so much, Mason. We really appreciate it. Best of luck against the Falcons, and let's get back to the Mountain West Championship game, get a victory Saturday.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And that's Mason Hampton. A couple of other things on the Campbell Trophy. He's one of 13 finalists. They all got $18,000. I was trying to give him $85,000. I'm sure he would appreciate that. So, but the winner, there's 13 guys. All of them will go to New York City in early December, much like the Heisman Trophy.
Yep.
And one of the guys is going to get an extra $25,000 as the winner of the Campbell Trophy. So,
yeah, I think it's an awesome opportunity for that kid. And, you know, it's good. It's good to see kids that are good kids. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to see guys have success. You want Boise State to win, you know, and some people want it to win at all costs. But to see a guy like that comes in here, takes his education serious, takes winning serious, wants to do both and has success and knows that he's going to move on and do something great, that's the kind of alumni you want mm-hmm. at Boise State.
397 accounting. I'd love to know what he got his B in.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I let it.
His one.
Probably something – he's an accounting major.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's probably in a science.
Yeah.
Probably like some upper-end biology class that he B-plused in and probably feels terrible about
it. Now, we were talking with him about snapping to different quarterbacks, question you asked.
Yeah.
So you have two different guys.
Yeah.
How different is it? Because we were talking lefty-righty, maybe somebody's taller, maybe somebody's shorter. All that factors in and snaps?
Yeah, I think it's something tremendously different. You know, that question wasn't even so much about, like, you know, how you feeling about playing with two quarterbacks,
right,
or, you know, the questions that we've been answering on this show a lot. I kind of physically wanted to know what the differences felt like. To me, I associate the same as, you know, you watch a game, a changeover in a pitcher, you know, mm-hmm. and you see them go out and get their first few pitches. They get their warm-ups. The catcher's got to see how ball moves because guys throw different kind of pitches, different kind of locations, different breaks, left hand to right hand, all that kind of stuff. Well, the quarterback position is the exact same way. Everybody, you know, quarterback-wise plays with different depth. They put their hands in a different position. They like the ball in a different kind of way. Some guys want the laces. Some guys don't want the laces. So, you know, whenever you see a quarterback change in a game, the center steps off to the side during that first TV timeout and does the same thing. We're snapping to the guy. We're showing him how we're going to step, what it feels like, what the, you know, his depth of hands are, how we're going to feel when we feed it, and try to work that relationship. The center-quarterback exchange thing is absolutely one of the most basic things in all of football, and what you learn at the youngest of ages, and can be one of the most detrimental things in the entire game, because if you don't work that out, you got a real problem. So to have this kid not even know most of the time, like he said in his interview, which quarterback is going to be in the game, it's been tremendous that we haven't seen more problems at the center quarterback exchange.
I was going to say, the whole total exchange of Rippon coming in, Rippon going out, Cozart coming in, like
yeah.
he's at a moment's notice, much like hockey,
yeah.
changing on the fly. It really has been seamless, which I think is unbelievable.
Yeah, I think it has. I think it's the credit goes to him for the ability to make the adjustments. Like he said, they've both been in the huddle at times. He doesn't know exactly what's going to happen until the play is called. You know, it's a different formation or it's a different group or whatever the personnel that comes on the field. He may not know what the play is going to be, and then the play gets called. And he goes, okay, all of a sudden, hey, Cozart's going to be behind me, and we're going to put Rippon out in the slot. So he's got to make those adjustments on the fly, and it's been great on the quarterbacks to stay flexible with them. And again, I'm surprised we haven't had more problems at the center quarterback exchange.
I mean, that's something that's just so basic, and you're right. If you lose one or two of those a game,
oh yeah,
that's a problem.
It's detrimental. You know, most of those quarterbacks they're running backwards. Running backs are running in different directions. Centers are moving forward. Usually that ball's sitting there for some defensive lineman just to fall on. It never ends up well.
Enjoy a Prater Hater lager beer while they last. Go to the Ram in Boise off of Broadway or in Meridian at Eagle Road and Pine. Enjoy them by the pint, but don't wait because this grog won't last past the 19th. Get your limited edition Prater Hater 22-ounce bottle and t-shirt at the Ram. That's located on Broadway in Boise. Again, don't forget, coming up Thursday, 11:30 a.m., basketball against Texas El Paso, normally on KBOI, but the two-day games, Thursday and Friday at the tournament in South Carolina, will be heard on AM 1350, the ticket, not KBOI. Up next in the sports update, details on the state's oldest rivalry. That's next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, the ticket.
Sports update sponsored by the Hawaii Tavern. Make your next dinner occasion in downtown Boise at the newest urban-inspired spot in town, the Hawaii Tavern Steak at Sea on 11th and Main. Well, the state's oldest rivalry will go into effect tonight. The College of Idaho and the Northwest Nazarene will meet for the Mayor's Cup. It'll be the 203rd meeting between the two teams. Tip-off tonight at 7. The first time they'll be meeting, with Nazarene being known as the Nighthawks, not the Crusaders.
Oh, my gosh. I remember I was working the day that announcement was made. I still...
Should we change the name of the Mayor's Cup? Is that too, like, ownership heavy? Should we just call it the Cup?
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right.
Well,
I was going to say 203 meetings. That's a lot of games.
Yeah. We have to call the first, though, right? This is the first with the Nighthawks.
Yeah, well, do we have any idea what the overall record of this thing is?
I could not find it.
Oh, okay. So we got no idea. Hopefully one side has dominated this, so the team that has been dominated is like, no, this is the new series. We're starting the new Mayor's Cup, and right now it's 0-0.
Between the Nighthawks and the
Exactly.
Yokes.
New Cup.
Well, NCAA men's basketball season is underway, and tonight the Ultimate Champions Classic for the top 7 teams in the country will be in action. At 5 o'clock, number 1 Duke will play number 2 Michigan State, and then at 7:30, number 7 Kentucky will play number 4 Kansas.
And my question looking at these four, first of all, it'd be a great ticket to have. You get to see two great games. How many of the four of these are going to make the Final Four? Are we going to have more than one? Or are we going to get one out of these four into the Final
I would
four?
Take one.
One?
If I had the choice, I'd take one.
I would guess one would probably be my guess, too. I mean, I think it's hard to stay on the fence. I should probably have to say two since you already took one.
No,
but
I mean,
I'm
you
with
could
you
go
one.
With zero also. I mean,
no, I think one of them makes it. One will skate through.
Well, Darren College, did your phone blow up from Dallas Cowboys at all?
Of course it did.
Because Adrian Claiborne had 6 sacks on their backup left tackle. They probably were calling everyone, so I wouldn't be surprised if they called you.
I think this is probably the worst one I've seen since when I played. Winston Justice had a run. The exact same team got picked, or when he got picked up by the Philadelphia Eagles, but it was against the Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, Winston Justice got drafted just before me, so of course I was bitter. Like all players, we hold a certain, you know, certain guys responsible for our position in life. And he had the same thing. And I remember watching, like, the second sack, and I'm like, yeah, that's what you get. Third sack, oh, yeah. Fourth sack, you start to feel bad. Mm-hmm. And by that fifth and sixth sack, you're like, just somebody help this man out. Just get him out of there.
But how much is it on the team, too? I mean, if I'm getting somebody blown up, I'm trying to change my protection a little bit, have somebody come over there and chip or help or do something, right?
Yeah, it was an overall debacle, I think, by both sides. But a couple of them, he really set himself up for problems. I mean, he had some slide protections there where he had help the inside and he allowed himself to be beat outside, which is obviously a huge no-no. He wasn't – that's just somebody who's – you're in such a bad place that you can't even find your right footwork anymore. And the best thing they could have done was benched him. But you got to get somebody out there to help him and help it out. But I don't know how much more they could have done.
Is 6 a record, Fish?
I believe
you know what it is?
It's the second most all-time.
Second most.
It's a franchise record.
Seven's the all-time. And I can't remember who did it. But 7's the all-time. But he tied the franchise record and a couple other guys. And I think it was like the third or fourth time a Falcon has had 6 sacks in a game. So not a team you really want to face, I guess.
No, and good news for Claiborne. He got a nice $750,000 incentive bonus. He hit his 8 sacks, which was a career high. And if he can get 4 more sacks by the end of the year, he will rack another $1.75 million in incentive.
They don't get Dallas again. They're not in the same division.
He's
too bad.
Praying that playoff stats count. They get him in the playoffs.
Well, I think he's not a double-digit sacks guy. I think he's only had double digits once or twice in his career before this point. So he's probably due at least 3 more sacks by the end of the year. So he's going to be close. I think he gets like a 1 point. He gets to 1.2 after like 2 more, and he needs the full 4. And the problem is that when you do something like that, you're now circled by offensive linemen. So they're going to be watching him. But he's going to have a little bit of motivation. Money will make you do some funny things.
But, you know, some of these bonuses, and I don't know if, as a lineman if you ever had any bonuses in your contract, but sometimes you chuckle when you see it. They'll get a bonus for whatever, whether it's a coach or a player, and you're like, there's no way they're going to get that. And then all of a sudden, something like this gets
Yeah, hit. Exactly. For a guy like him, it's definitely, you know, you see offensive lineman ones, it's funny. It's usually based on amount of time you play or if you're going to make a Pro Bowl or if we win the Super Bowl. I saw one offensive lineman had one, like, if he was the Super Bowl MVP or something like that. I'm like, who knows? Offensive lineman's going to be Super Bowl MVP. But, yeah, the sack one, I think Marshawn Lynch's contract is another one people broke down this year, and they're like, you're not going to rush for 2,500 yards. Let's calm down. So
let's be realistic on the goal. I'll take a little less is for the bonus money, but on a more attainable one you can get.
Yeah, I don't know if guys just want their contract to look like really pumped up. They're like, they know they're not going to get those millions anyways, but I was part of a 4-year deal for $50 million, but $30 million of it was in incentives I'm never, ever going to attain.
Well, speaking of money making people doing funny things, the New England Patriots also seem to have that effect. This time it was on tight end Martellus Bennett. He was cut by the Packers. The Packers claimed he failed to disclose an injury. Bennett then said he had a torn shoulder. He was going to have surgery and retire. According to Ian Rappaport, his agent was telling teams don't claim him until the Patriots called. Then his shoulder was miraculously healed, and he played 7 snaps and had 3 catches and is now the backup tight end.
Yeah, I think it's a terrible situation, I guess, from a couple of perspectives. The way he exited there, the way he tried to throw the doctors under the bus. Obviously, Dr. McKenzie was my doctor when I was there. nothing but absolute respect for the guy, a guy who tried to pull me off field numerous times against my will, who I had to fight off to continue to play games. So I hold the Green Bay Packers and them with the utmost respect. It's hard to get on Bennett's side on this one, to making a miraculous change like that. I don't know if he went to confession. I don't know if he prayed. I don't know if he got some water sprinkled on. I don't know what his situation is, but all of a sudden become healthy when you think you're going to be on a team that's a Super Bowl contender after you left a team that you thought was a Super Bowl contender. It doesn't look good.
I've always been fascinated on the, quote, passing the physical. Like, Lane, the defensive back, went to Houston.
No.
He didn't pass their physical, but then he comes back to Seattle and he plays immediately. So different teams have different thresholds on what they think, or they look for different things.
Yeah, different teams have different doctors and different things that they're going to be willing to go. I mean, everybody, it's all a call from your doctors and their team staff. They're going to look at something and be like, hey, we think that that's going to be a problem with us in the next couple of years, or the next couple of months, or the next couple of weeks, depending on how long they need a guy. And it's up to them and the doctors to kind of talk it over. I had to do numerous physicals when I became a free agent, and you know, I'd never missed a game at that point, so I knew I was going to pass. I watched some dudes pass physicals that I was like, dude, that guy doesn't look like he can walk across the street. So it's just one of those things where, you know, teams have a threshold, and it's their decision up and down that board.
Well, we all know that the NFL is trying to make it a global game, and a couple of star players are following that moniker. Ezekiel Elliott serving a minimum 4-game suspension before his appeal can be heard December 1st. According to the Dallas Cowboys, has left the country in order to stay in game shape while being away from the distractions of his legal case. Meanwhile, stop me if you've heard this before, a Colts quarterback who's missing the entire year is going to Europe for stem cell treatment.
They've got to have like a punch card going with this doctor at this point. Like, I'm trying to figure out why guys aren't going there before the season. Like, if this guy's doing such good things for him, maybe they should start sending some people there before it becomes a situation where they're paying him, what, 20-something million to sit on the bench this year? And I'm totally clueless on the Ezekiel Elliott thing. I don't get where he's going.
No one knows where
he
is.
Marshawn Lynch went to a local high school and practiced and did just fine. What's he got to go to Europe for 4 weeks for?
Vacation?
Yeah, it sounds like
he's staying in game shape, though.
Yeah, well, we know what his game shape is. He's kind of a Eddie Lacy kind of looking guy.
Kind of sounds like he's doing the Adrian Gonzalez thing. He was on the disabled list for the Dodgers in the World Series. He went to Europe.
You know, I'm going to, if I'm Ezekiel Elliott from a former player, I'm heading over there because I'm not getting drug tested while I'm there for 4 weeks. I'm getting myself game right. I'm coming back from that 4 weeks bigger, stronger, faster. That's what I would be doing. No idea what Ezekiel's doing.
And we'll have the sports update, an update from yesterday. Vern Ball was the winner of our Twin Peaks Man card. He had the prediction of Boise State winning. Ripon throwing for 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. Alexander Mattison, 125 and 1 touchdown and an interception by the defense.
Did anybody have the thing going to overtime and Boise State making a tremendous comeback?
I don't think anyone predicted that.
Yeah, I don't ever see that. I would like to know in the last 10 years how many times Boise State's even been to overtime. I played in one overtime game here in the 4 years I was a starter. One, ever. So, I mean, I got no idea how many times they've even been in overtime.
We looked at it. I want to say it was 4 or 5. There have been 3 since I've been here. The loss to Nevada,
yeah.
The Kaepernick game. There was a loss to San Diego State and a loss to Washington State before this one. And then the last time they had won a game in overtime, I believe, was 07, which is Kaepernick's first game for Nevada against Boise State. So there haven't been a whole lot of
them. We also had the Fiesta Bowl, right?
And the Fiesta Bowl, obviously.
So odds are that the next one we'll probably see is against Nevada.
It's pretty high.
And it's a 50-50 on where we're going to come out of that one.
I think Nevada's going to have to get a little better before they go to overtime against us. Listen to the Treasure Valley Prep Rally. It's brought to you by Mount West Bank. It'll be Thursday at 4:45 on Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater. Fruitland is the only local team left playing for the title. They'll be playing Snake River at Holt Arena in Pocatello Saturday afternoon at 12. The Grizzlies coach Ryan Tracy will be along to discuss the state semifinal game this week, so don't miss it. And it's sponsored by Mountain West Bank. Love where you bank. Coming up next, we've got Quick Hits, where Daryl and I will tackle 4 topics about the NFL in rapid-fire fashion, including, do NFL players really want to play games overseas? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number 1.
Well, it's Bob and Darren today. Darren College sitting in for Chris Lewis, who is probably in the air as we speak, heading to South Carolina with the men's basketball team, getting ready for the tournament that was supposed to be in Puerto Rico. Darren, we're going to hit some NFL topics. Number one, Jerry Jones, an owner in the news. You know him. You know his personality. You know his face. Other owners you don't know as well that are kind of in the background. When you're a free agent in the NFL, does who the owner is ever factor into where somebody goes?
I think money's always the number one factor, but I think also the owner can help. I looked at a guy like Jerry Jones and knew that if I could get in that team and be his guy, I was going to be his guy forever. You look at a guy like Tony Romo, you know, once you're his guy and he feels like you're part of the family, you're going to be the family for a long time, and that's the kind of family you want to be in.
Topic number two.
The NFC has been wild this year. If we'd gone down to Las Vegas and said we're going to bet on the Eagles, the Rams, the Vikings, and the Saints to win divisions, we'd probably be making a lot of money right now. So what is your take, and why this year do you think we have so many different teams at the top in the NFC?
I think it's because the NFC has been so terrible this year. I think it's really hard. I mean, obviously the Eagles are playing great football. Their quarterback's playing excellent football. But to see the guys that were at the very bottom of the division make the switch over and go to the top of the division, I think it just shows that most teams are probably one or two teams away, or one or two guys away from being the team in their division. But it's because of, I think it's just the lack of good football this year in those divisions overall. So it only took one or two guys to make the change.
And how much now that these teams that are getting some winning streak, the Rams who weren't expected to be good, the Eagles, the Saints, the Vikings doing it with Case Keenum at quarterback, how much now is confidence that these teams, we've won some games, we've looked pretty good, and now they're playing better because they're more confident?
Yeah, when you used to be the worst team in your division, now you've become the best. You're, again, still playing as the team that used to be the worst team, and you're just willing to do whatever it takes. We're going to run, we're going to throw, we're going to make the sacrifices. You're not playing tight because you don't expect to be there anyways. And then you're starting to build confidence, and we've talked about earlier. That momentum starts to go your way, and all of a sudden you're the team that's starting the game 7-up.
Is there one of those four teams that you think has the best chance to get to the Super Bowl from the NFC?
Oh, I mean, I think the most interesting ones to me are going to be Philly and L.A. right now. I think that the amount of points that they put up, young coaching staff in L.A., I think it's extremely interesting right now. And, I mean, I don't know if anybody's playing better than Philly's quarterback right now. Mm-hmm.
And the Rams, of course, were chided for hiring McVay as the coach. Everybody said he was too young, would just be a buddy to Goff, and he's probably the coach here. Peterson, probably the coach of the year right now.
Yeah, definitely going to be up for probably coach of the year, and well-deserved. He's done an amazing job in turning that place around.
Topic number three.
Well, good news for the UCLA freshmen that have returned from China. I'm sure that is a big load off their mind, and they'll be glad to get back to the States. They're flying back today. I'm sure you've been on teams, Darren, where somebody does something on the road and maybe gets sent home, gets suspended. What's the reaction from the other guys on the team to people that get in trouble when you're away?
I think it always depends on what the problem is, but I've had guys during bye weeks get arrested, guys getting in a bar fight, guys that you need, key impact players, and it's always one of those things where you look at them, you say you're selfish, man. It's like it's 16 weeks, we need you for this amount of time, and you can't keep yourself clean, and that's always a hard thing for me to deal with. I get guys, you know, find themselves in bad situations, but to get caught for shoplifting in your situation, doesn't your dad sell like shoes for like $600 a pop? Like, what are you doing stealing sunglasses? Come on.
Topic number four.
And number four, the Raiders and Patriots are playing in Mexico this week. You ever played any foreign games? And if you did you like it? And if you didn't, what do people in the league think about it? You want them or not?
Yeah, I did the London game. I think I did it twice. So you can feel that some guys are starting to get a little tired of the London games. You look at teams that are consistently in the London game, that they're going to be the guys that are over there every year because of maybe a lack of a strong following here. Guys don't mind moving and head in and take a few games over there. Guys don't necessarily like the travel. I think the Mexico one is more interesting. Not as many guys. It's a newer series for us. It's not as far of travel, much easier game. But again, for NFL football players, it's always going to come down to the bottom dollar. If they've got a way to increase the size of the league, increase its footprint, increase how much money's coming in, increase the size of their contracts, they'll do about anything.
Do you get time off like you went to London? Is it more like a college bowl game, or is it more like going to a game in Detroit in November?
It's similar to going to a Detroit game in November. You do fly over there an extra day earlier than even you would fly to an East Coast game. So usually that first day you had off to kind of go enjoy it and see the sights a little bit. But from there on, it's pretty much a business trip. You're there to play a game and you usually head home right after. So you get about a day to enjoy and see the sights, but you're there to do a job.
Family get to go with you, or if they do they have to go on their own?
They go on their own. So I think the coaching staff gets a little bit of priority. They're allowed to bring some wives on the trip. I usually saw coaches' wives on the flight in some way, but as a player, it's a business trip. So you're either flying your family over there yourself, and they're going to meet you there, or they're not coming at all.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
Was your wife one that liked to go to away games, or did she just as soon stay and watch the game on TV?
When we first got in the NFL, she went to a few of them, obviously before we had kids. Once we had kids, it becomes a whole different challenge. When we were in Green Bay, we were very fortunate, obviously, to have games in Minnesota, Chicago, Detroit, games that are close. But no wife wants to go to Detroit. But she would make the trip down to Chicago every once in a while, pretty short drive out of Green Bay. And then she's gone to a couple of the road games that were big, obviously playoff appearances and Super Bowls. But by the time we had kids, there wasn't a big priority on traveling to away games. You know, most of them, it's such a short trip. Yeah. You're there, you land, you practice, and you play.
Well, when people ask me, they say, boy, it's great. Don't you think it's great going with the team? Until they find out you're coming back right after the game.
Yeah.
And we landed at 5:30 in the morning after the game. Really upsets your whole sleep pattern. It's not like you could stay overnight, come back at your leisure on Sunday after maybe doing something fun.
Yeah, the only good road game that I ever played in college football when I was here was when we traveled to Hawaii, because we always got to go a day early. At least. So we'd get one day to kind of check out Waikiki Beach, do that kind of thing, get out of your system, and then you practiced a full day, and then you had a game. But my Hawaii experience was always excellent, because both years that I was on the road to Hawaii, my sophomore year and my senior year, it was the last game of the year.
Ooh.
So we were always able to stay that night after the game, go out, have a good time, enjoy our wins, because we always beat Hawaii, and then fly home the very next day and end your football season. So it was one of those things where it was that rare one trip in college football where we got to stay long, and it was almost like a mini bowl game.
So who was friends with somebody at the league office? Because to end your season in Hawaii, I think that'd be a coveted spot on the schedule.
I don't know why the WAC had put us in that situation for those 2 years. I don't know how it happened, but you know, it always seemed like Hawaii came to us like mid to late year on the two other years. But for whatever reason, my sophomore and my senior year, it worked out that Hawaii was that game for us. And after my senior year, we knew what was coming, and kind of seeing that end and knowing that night after that game was probably a little different than any other one in my college football career.
We have senior night coming up. Different feel for a senior night, you think, if it's the last game of the regular season versus there's one more to go?
Absolutely. I think it's different, but always knowing it's going to be your last game on the blue, I think, is its own special thing. You got one more on the road, but this will be the last time you play on that blue.
We'll be back with more. Darren College today sitting in for Chris. As always, Tuesdays at 2, we come up with our top four in college football. Chris has his, I have mine. We'll get Darren's thoughts. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Chris is heading to South Carolina. He'll be on the call of Boise State's basketball game, tournament opener with Texas El Paso. That'll be Thursday morning, 11:30, and you can hear it on AM 1350. Again, the two-day games, Thursday and Friday, both on AM 1350. Pleased to have Darren College sitting in for Chris today while he is gone, and we come to the 2 o'clock spot on Tuesday, and as it has been every week since the third week of the season, we've come up with our playoff top four. Darren, as a player, when you were playing at Boise State, did you pay attention to any of the ratings, any of the rankings, and did they affect people on the team?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. We paid attention to it because at the time, Boise State was always outside the top 25, and then during my 4 years of starting, we started to make that run, and we were the group that, you know, got us up there before we became the Fiesta Bowl team that everybody knows and recognizes. So we always saw it as a slight. It was something that we wanted to achieve, and we knew when we started getting in that, we would start getting those ESPN games, we'd start getting more and more recognition, and we were the guys that wanted to fight for that, wanted to come out of that kind of that mentality of a mid-major whatever team to a relevant team.
Now, for you, it would have been recognition to get into the top 25, but for the teams in the top four, you're actually in the playoff where you can win a national championship. I would think a little more at stake to get into this ranking than to get either into just the regular top 10 or to the top 25, because there's actually a payday for this.
Yeah, now it's much different. Back then, we were just trying to get ranked as high as possible because we were just hoping to get one of the cool bowl games or, you know, go against a higher-ranked team. Now it matters. You want to get into that top four, be part of that playoff, and push for a national championship. So totally different standard and totally different responsibility now getting in there. So guys that are on the outside looking in, they're doing whatever they can. They're watching every game.
If you told me, beginning of a season, generally speaking, you know, you were going to be the fifth best team in the nation, I think, boy, that's pretty good. We've had a good season. But to think that if you could have been one more at four, it would have been better.
Yeah, in the case of Ricky Bobby, you're just the first loser. Yeah, you're the first guy on the outside looking in. So fifth is definitely not where you want to be. I'd probably be sitting there wishing I was at 25 instead of five.
All right, and what we have done every week, Chris obviously has had his four. I've had four. Some weeks it's been close. Some weeks we've been very, very different. Chris recorded his top four last night before leaving on the plane this morning. I don't know who he's picked, so let's have some fun. Chris is going to go first. I'm going to go second. Darren's going to go third, and we'll see if we can have a consensus or whether we're all over the place.
Number one.
Number one is Miami. It has to be the best resume in college football, and that's this exercise. We're not determining who you think is the best team necessarily as much as who has the best resume to this point. If you compare them head-to-head against Alabama, still Bama's best win to this year, we're still using that Florida State win as a win that buoyed themselves. We know Florida State has tailed off. Miami is also beating Florida State. Not only that, Miami has a top 5 win against Notre Dame, have another top 15 win against Virginia Tech. So Miami, the best resume in college football right now, they're number one.
I understand what you're saying, Chris, but I've got to put Alabama as number one for me. I just watch the teams and watch them play and just think, who is in danger of losing? Who has the cleanest undefeated season? I think it's Alabama. I think their defense is by far better than anybody that's contending with them. Their offense does enough to win. Nick Saban, I think, is a great coach. I understand what you're saying about Miami. I'm ready to move Miami to number one. If they stay unbeaten, they've got some tough games down the line. But for now, I got to go with Alabama, a team that every year seems to be up there and seems to never choke.
Yeah, I think this is the hardest one. The 1 and 2 position is going to be the most difficult to decide. Miami's extremely explosive, fun to watch, exciting, but the pedigree lies with Alabama. I think if you're the champion and you haven't lost, then you kind of go along that line. Alabama has the coach, the pedigree, the defense to stay at number one spot. If Miami remains undefeated for the year, though, I think they slowly make that pass.
Number two.
Alabama being number two is a significant step up for me because I very rarely, if ever, have had them in the top two so far this college football season, because while they're winning and winning in a dominant fashion, who exactly have they been beating to this point? Now, the last 2 weeks, now they're starting to beat teams that make you pay attention. LSU beating them by 2 touchdowns. And it looked good against Mississippi State for the entire game, but them rallying at the end against a top 20 opponent. So now having those 2 wins under their belt while being undefeated means they're number two.
And I have Miami at number two. So Chris and I are flipped, and I'm sort of going the opposite. Miami had done nothing to impress me until the last 2 weeks when they beat Virginia Tech 28-10 and then just crushing Notre Dame 41-8. It looks like the swagger is back at Miami. Second-year coach Mark Richt, after such a long, successful run at Georgia, really seems like it's paid dividends. I have Miami as the team that's making the biggest jump for me. I didn't even have them in the top four last week. I have them at number two right now. So Chris and I flip-flopping Alabama and Miami.
Miami's, again, also number two for me. They were in that push for the top right now. Again, explosive, exciting to watch. The swagger's back. The U may actually be feared again. It's been a long road back up there. They deserve to sit at number two.
Number three.
It's Oklahoma at number three. That's also a significant step up. I had them outside before this week. Oklahoma State and TCU in back-to-back weeks will get your attention. Oklahoma State, a team that doesn't play much defense but has a great offense, you outscore them. And against TCU, they actually are a Big 12 team that has defense. You were rut for 38 points in the first half and hold them down and only 20 at the end, and they started putting up some points late. Oklahoma dominated that game. So Oklahoma Sooners, who have wins against Ohio State, Oklahoma State, TCU, all inside the top 12, they're number three.
Chris and I have gone back and forth on how we judge one-loss teams. Chris historically has given the edge to the team with the better win. I have historically penalized the team with the worst loss. I like Oklahoma for my number three spot because I do think they have the best non-conference win at Ohio State, but I also think their loss to Iowa State, who's proven to be a top 25 this season, is a significantly better loss than Clemson, who I will move down, who lost at Syracuse, a team that's probably not even going to a bowl game.
Yeah, I got to agree with you guys both. I think the Ohio State win, huge. Oklahoma State, the back-to-back wins, you know, top teams. I think they've got the best push. I'm going to have to go with you. The Iowa State loss at first looked absolutely terrible, but has continued to improve and look better. I'm going to have to stick with Oklahoma State also.
Number four.
Clemson's at number four. The reason? Wins. Even the fact that they have a loss, who they have beaten is enough for them to get inside the top four. They've beaten Auburn. They've beaten NC State. They've beaten Virginia Tech. All those wins impressive. Wisconsin only has one win that's in that ballpark, and that was that most recent week where they had a home game against Iowa. Sorry, that's not enough to pass a team that has shown that they could beat the best of the best like Clemson. So right now, Wisconsin on the outside, Clemson at number four.
I have Clemson holding at number four again this week for many of the same reasons. He said, now as I look down the line, for me, unless a whole bunch of things happen that are crazy, I don't see Miami and Clemson both getting to the four. I think when they play the first weekend in December for the ACC championship, those two, one of them will be eliminated.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, look at Wisconsin's schedule. I think that they have the chance to obviously finish up undefeated. It's going to be a back and forth. A lot of people will say that they're the undefeated team. They deserve to be in the top four. Players don't get to choose who they get to play. It's not their fault that everybody else around them has fallen down. The committee is going to decide based off quality wins. You look at the three wins for Clemson, big wins. They're going to walk in that game. Everybody's got to have December 2nd circled. It's going to be you and them. I don't see either one losing until they get to that game, but it may be decided who wins that game is going to be who's on the outside looking in.
And I have in the wings Wisconsin, as you mentioned, an undefeated team with a fairly soft schedule. Oh, Georgia really? With one loss. My alma mater just embarrassed themselves on Saturday at Auburn, but they still have a game with Alabama or Auburn in the SEC championship. And they also have Kentucky and Georgia Tech, so if somehow they win all of those, they might find themselves back in the top four. And I think Auburn with two losses has a chance. Nobody's ever gotten to the playoff with two losses, but they could beat Alabama in 2 weeks. Then they could play Georgia again and beat them and be SEC champions. I think if they win all those games, they'll be tough to leave out.
It will be tough to leave out. I think the hardest one out of all of them that I'm watching is really UCF, which is going to be a team that's going to do everything that everybody asked for them, and they'll have no chance of ever getting to this bowl. I look at a team like Auburn, which if they sweep in, if they walk over those teams, is going to go in with two losses, going to have much more quality wins. I think it continues to show you, unless you find the strength of schedule that I don't think any mid-major team can find right now, you're not ever going to be the team that goes in. You're going to always be the outside looking in. So I think it makes an argument for them having their second option outside the five, a bowl game or something, or playoff system, because you're just not going to get the wins. You play outside these major conferences, you got no chance of getting the quality wins it takes to be a top four team.
I think the only way you're going to see a mid-major play for a national championship is if they ever expand it to eight and give all five Power Fives automatic bid, all those champions,
yep.
Give the best group of five, that'd be number six, mm-hmm. So that'd be Central Florida this year, at least as it stands, and then have two at-large teams coming in. I don't see a non-Power Five playing until there's an eight-team playoff, and who knows, maybe we'll never see that.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever see it. I don't know if that option comes around. Unless the NCAA finds a way to make another dollar off it, then you've got a chance. But the only way it happens is if you happen to be like Fresno was back in the 2000s, where you schedule big-time teams at the beginning of the conference, at the beginning of the season, you somehow walk away with wins out of those and then sweep your division. You've got to be undefeated, and you need quality wins against somebody from the SEC, somebody from the Big Ten, Big 12, or Pac-10 team, or Pac-12 team, something like that. But it's an anomaly.
It's going to be a diamond in the rough sometime, but yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
Rod Stewart coming to the Ford Idaho Center Thursday, April the 12th. And you can get your tickets starting this Friday at 10 a.m. at ictickets.com or at the box office or by calling 208-442-3232. When we come back, we'll find out about Air Force. Jesse Kurtz from their broadcast team joins us. They're 4-6, but they've beaten the Broncos the last 3 years. Can Air Force do it again? That'll be the question when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Boise State and Air Force coming up in the next to the last week of the college football regular season. Bob Beeler, along with former Bronco, Green Bay Packer, and other NFL teams, Darren College sitting in for Chris, who's on his way to the basketball tournament in South Carolina. And on Tuesdays at 2:15, we check in with one of the broadcasters for this week's Bronco opponent, get the lowdown on what their team is doing and what we can expect to see. Jesse Kurtz joins us. He is the color commentator on the Air Force broadcast, as well as working for the Mountain West Network. Jesse, we appreciate your time and glad you could join us today.
I'm glad I could be here in the presence of Boise royalty. They had Snoop Dogg as the bumper. Things are good.
We do what we can.
Yeah. So, Jesse, Air Force has won three games against Boise State in a row. So they've had the Boise State number. What's the view of this series from both the Air Force team and fan perspective?
Well, it's funny you bring that up. I just spent the afternoon over at the Air Force Academy, just got back in the office and brought that very thing up to the players, and they want none of it. Truly, they want none of the 1-3 in a row. I do think that they're proud of that. It is a feather in the cap of this program, knowing who Boise State is, who they've been, to know that they have beat that program three consecutive years. But by no means, and this was hammered home today, do they think that that means that, you know, that Air Force has arrived as a king in the Mountain West Conference. Boise State has been that and more to this league and to college football as a whole. So they're super proud of it, but it's not something they're talking about in the locker room whatsoever.
Are they talking about the spoiler? I mean, they're in a position now, obviously their season is not where they want to be. They've got a chance to end a streak for Boise State, Boise State making their run at a championship. Are they talking about spoiler alert? Are they saying, hey, our season's not our way, we're going to take yours away too?
You know what? Not in those terms, Darren. What they are talking about is there's still plenty to play for as far as bowl eligibility. Yes, you're exactly right. This season has not gone the way that anyone at the Academy has envisioned. They had higher hopes than being a 6-6 team if this team were to win out. But the chance to go to Boise to play in a place where that program doesn't lose very often against a team that has a national presence, the opportunity to go out there and win a game like that, that certainly has been talked about. But spoiling Boise State's season hasn't at least verbally entered their mind. No one is talking about that, but they are talking about a great opportunity to go play a team that really could make you feel good if you were able to go out of there late Saturday night with a victory.
Jesse Kurtz joining us. He is on the Air Force radio broadcast. Broncos hosting Air Force Saturday night, 8:15 on the Blue. Senior night, last home regular season game for the Broncos. You're listening to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Jesse, this Air Force team, you mentioned 4-6. They've been a team that when I've seen them play, there are some weeks I think, wow, this team looks really, really good. And then there are other weeks I'd say, they let a couple things slip away, and then still other weeks, like against Army, I don't think they look very good at all. So what's been the difference from week to week for them?
Well, your assessment is right on par with what I walk away from the booth every night. You know, there have been many of Saturdays where I've walked out surprised, and whether that's be surprised that this team went in and just totally dominated a Colorado State team, at their place, where a place they hadn't lost up until that point, beat them 45-28. And then a week later, you go into that Army game, which is one of the major head scratchers of the last couple decades. It's an Air Force team that was shut out at home for the first time since 1980. It's a team that was just completely bullied by a team that they're typically bullying them, and Army came in and just manhandled Air Force, only 95 yards of rushing. So it's just been one of those years, Bob, and, you know, we talked about it on the pregame show last week. There are just some things, as you know, you just can't explain in sports. It just happens. And we've had a number of those where we have yet to put our finger on why it's happened, how it's happened, and I think that's frustrated the coaches to some degree, knowing that week to week, you just don't know what you're going to get. We've had some really pleasant surprises, some really great games, and then just some games where you say, I don't know what went wrong, how it went wrong, or how it went that wrong. But it certainly has been up and down, and I think it's going to take a while to really understand what led to the highest of highs and what led to the lowest of lows here in 2017.
Yeah, I think the anomalies are the hardest part. You talk about that CSU game, and you talk about Army, and you look at Nevada, close win in a team they probably should have dominated. I look at a team that's averaging over 300 yards a game on the ground with a defense that's given up over 250 yards a game on the ground. You expect a team that runs that much and gets practice against that much to have that. Where's that coming from? Where's that lack of defense? Because I look at Air Force teams, and I've always known them as teams that are committed, they're coached well, they're disciplined, they're a group that, you know, you know they're going to be in the right place doing the right job. How can that slip up be coming?
Well, this is going to go on the coach speak, and I don't mean to go this way, but I am. This is a very inexperienced defense, has been from the opening kickoff back in September. Started the year, guys, having lost 12 of the top 13 tacklers from a year ago. The only guy that really had tackled a Division I player was Grant Ross.
Wow.
And he's been a solid middle linebacker, but the secondary lost three guys that were all Mountain West, either first team or consideration, in Weston Steelhammer, Brody Hicks, and Roland Latipo. lost everybody up front, lost all linebackers except for your middle linebacker and Grant Ross. So it's a team that came into this season already very inexperienced, very young, and then in the first three games lost two starters in Cody Moorhead, one of the defensive linemen, and then Garrett Coppola, who was their biggest playmaker in the secondary, lost him. He blocked a punt against San Diego State and then broke his collarbone. Tried to come in the next series with a broken collarbone in three different places and tried to play and couldn't go, and he's been out for the season. So it's been a very inexperienced, and they've shown every bit of that. The inability to cause turnovers, only caused nine all year. Did three of those in one game against Colorado State, and then the inability to put pressure on the quarterback. This is a team that typically will get to the quarterback because of the scheme that they'll run. They run a lot of pressure blitzes. They'll bring probably more guys than they should, but they'll get a number of sacks in any given season. Right now, only nine, and that ranks last in the Mountain West. So the inability to cause turnovers, the inability to put pressure on the quarterback, and the inexperience have led to some trying times on defense.
Jesse Kurtz joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk. He is on the Air Force broadcast, talking about Boise State and Air Force Saturday night here on Idaho Sports Talk. Jesse, do you think for Air Force to get a fourth win in a row over Boise State that the onus, based on all the things of the youth, of the defense that you're talking about, the offense is going to have to find the end zone quite a few times to win?
Yes, that's no question. You're going to have to – this is a team that scored 14 points in the last 2 weeks combined. Going to have to do that. I'll tell you the secret to Air Force winning, and it's probably no secret, is controlling the clock. And what they did against Colorado State and against Nevada was unbelievable. Both games, time of possession, had the ball for over 42 minutes. So, you know, you're controlling the clock. Obviously, Colorado State had some quick-hitting drives, but they really frustrated Colorado State by the end of the game because they were never able to get the football. They limited the amount of possessions that Colorado State had. Nick Stevens kind of started pressing a little bit. He admitted so much after the game that he knew the amount of possessions they were going to have throughout the game were dwindling, and he forced a few things, and that led to a season-high three turnovers in that game. If Air Force has any shot to win in Boise on Saturday night, they're going to have to do something similar. They're going to have 7, 8 minute, 9, 10 minute drives. Those happened against Colorado State and Nevada, and it led to holding the ball for 42 minutes. If they're able to replicate something like that, run, you know, in the neighborhood of 90 plays, which is asking a lot, but this is a team that's done it in back-to-back games, the last two wins, I think that would be the recipe for keeping the game close and maybe having a shot at the end.
I got to totally agree with you. I look at the game last year, and I say for every minute the Boise State had the ball, Air Force had it for more than 2 minutes of that time. That's probably their only chance. As an outsider looking in at this two-quarterback system, we have to keep talking about it. I've got kind of a two-part question here. How is Air Force looking at that two-quarterback system? And then when we look at special teams as maybe being a decider in this game, where do you kind of – which way are you leaning? At Air Force's special teams, or are you looking at Boise State's special teams?
Well, Boise State special teams has been outstanding. So we'll start with the second question, I suppose, especially, you know, the return game. I mean, Avery Williams has been sensational as a freshman. That's very concerning. This is an Air Force team that's given up its fair share of big plays, whether that be on the offensive side or on the special team side. So I think special teams may lean in the favor of Boise State. Air Force has known to have been able to block kicks. They've done it with you know, a great deal of regularity under Troy Calhoun. They've blocked 34 kicks in his time here at Air Force. So, you know, that's one place that it's the great equalizer because sometimes it's the surprise element. When it comes to quarterbacks, when you're preparing for a guy like Brett Rypien, that's enough. I mean, that's plenty. And then you throw a guy like Cozart in there that's going to create problems in the run game and the pass game. It's an absolute nightmare. I can only imagine, you know, how long that's keeping Steve Russ, our defensive coordinator, up at night. I will tell you this. This is an Air Force team that has struggled with mobile quarterbacks and struggled with quarterbacks out of the shotgun. And New Mexico kind of started that at the start of the year. They run their option out of the shotgun. We all know that. But then we saw teams like Navy, who doesn't do that, run out of the shotgun. We saw Army, who doesn't do that, run out of the shotgun. And even Wyoming last week, you know, I know Craig Bowl was committed to putting Josh Allen under center a little bit more, getting him ready for the NFL and having him five and seven step drops, he was out of the shotgun. So there's a blueprint out there that these teams have seen where you give quarterbacks some room to run, some room to maneuver around. That's been the Achilles heel of Air Force. So this two quarterback system certainly is a lot to get prepared for if you're the Air Force defense.
Jesse, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you on Saturday over at the stadium.
Always appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Take care, Jesse.
And that is Jesse Kurtz. He talked about a block kick. Of course, the block kick was big for Air Force last year. You know, everybody says, well, you didn't get it at the 1 yard line, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But Boise State gave up a block punt for a touchdown in that game.
Yeah, I think special teams is always the great equalizer. Look at these two teams right now, actually averaging pretty close to the same amount of points per game. The defense is the biggest struggle for Air Force, the young defense. Too many injuries. They're giving up over 30 points a game, I think 34 points a game or something like that. It can always come down to special teams, especially if they're trying to control the clock. The opportunities to have the ball are going to be so important for Boise State. A block kick, a muff punt, something like that could be the total equalizer.
Join Caves and Prater at Beef O'Brady's. They'll be there Thursday for Idaho Sports Talk, and then get the best seats in the house for Thursday night football as Tennessee takes on Pittsburgh. Watch the show from 3 to 6. Register to win an overnight stay at the South Fork Lodge and watch the game at Beef's, or listen on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. Up next, we've got a sports update. Who earned themselves $750,000 last night? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Get sports updates sponsored by Wendy's. Wendy's knows what's next for the Broncos. It's the Air Force Falcons this Saturday. What's next for your next meal? Wendy's new chicken tenders, tender inside and crispy outside with Wendy's new side of Sossum Sauce. Try them now in a small combo for $5 at participating locations for a limited time. Well, the update to perhaps the biggest story last week, the three UCLA freshmen that were detained on suspicion of shoplifting in China last Tuesday have returned to the United States. The U.S. official told the Washington Post that the charges against the three have been reduced. Schools and the players will hold a news conference tomorrow before UCLA's home opener, though no extra disciplinary has been announced besides the fact that they were suspended for last Friday's game while they were under house arrest, so they were basically suspended anyway.
I would think they'd have to be suspended. We were talking today, different ideas. I think maybe the rest of the non-conference season for me if I was the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, you got to lay some kind of standard here on what's going to happen. Obviously, we don't know what the whole story is, and we probably never will since it was in China. We'll probably never figure out exactly what happened, but some heads got to roll for something like that. You got to miss some time for sure.
And if you're one of those guys missing a few games, does not compare to having to stay in China for 3 to 10 years, so they were fortunate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I'll take a couple conference games misses instead of hanging out in a Chinese prison for a good chunk of my life.
Well, Major League Baseball has started to announce their awards, and to no surprise, the Rookie of the Year announced last night, both unanimous Aaron Judge and the AL hitting 52 home runs, and Cody Bellinger in the NL, 39 home runs, 97 RBIs. The Manager of the Year will be announced tonight around 4 p.m., the Cy Young and the MVPs coming later in the week.
Unanimous picks were Bellinger and Judge. When you look at the other rookies, not even close. They deserve to be unanimous. I think tonight, both Manager of the Years, I think, are going to be very tight. I'm guessing maybe Hinch and Roberts, two guys that went to the World Series, but remember the ballots get turned in the day the regular season finishes, so nothing in the playoffs matter.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I enjoyed watching Judge. I thought it was awesome. Awesome baseball watch. He was one of those guys that there was a chance the ball was going to leave the park every single time he went up there, or he was going to strike out. It was just one of those, you know, Casey comes up to bat kind of things over and over. The Manager one, definitely an interesting one with no playoffs allowed, so we'll be interested to see what happens tonight.
Went to Yankee Stadium this year, and if you ever wanted to get to the concession stand line easy, go in a half inning where Judge is going to bat in the first three. You don't want to do that because you want to see him hit.
Yeah.
But he's bad for the sales of hot dogs, beer, and soda when he bats in innings.
Nobody's leaving their seat for that.
Well, going back to the NFL, Adrian Claiborne earned himself a nice $750,000 bonus, thanks in part to Dallas Cowboys starting their backup left tackle. Claiborne recorded 6 sacks in the Falcons' win over the Cowboys. Got him up to a career-high 8 in a single season, which triggered his first bonus. If he can get 4 more sacks, he'll in total earn himself an extra $1.75 million. Unfortunately, they don't get to play the Cowboys again in the regular season. I think he will petition the Falcons to move to their division. He said, we're Atlanta's super east. It's fine.
So, Darren, how do bonuses work as far as with the cap? If I gave you some astronomical bonus and hit it, do I have to cover it with the cap, or are bonuses outside the cap?
I think bonuses fall in the cap because the contract is actually based off those incentives being met. So his contract would have said, hey, your contract's worth $4 million, which I think is actually pretty close to that, about a $4.9 million contract.
So cap-wise, that money's already there. What they end up having to pay, I think, will actually come off the cap if he doesn't meet those escalators. But for him, he had, I looked it up, he had base salary about $3.7 and $1.7, $1.2 signing bonus. So he's added close to about half of his contract back. He's got about a 50% bonus on his contract this year if he can hit another four sacks.
Wow.
I want to know if he's going to send a little something to the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, just be like, hey, man, thanks for the effort. Just a watch. Something in that 50 to 60 grand range. A couple watches for all the guys.
I'd be looking at who I have to play next.
Oh, yeah, you've got it circled. And you're going to see a dude who rushes with when that amount of money's online, you're rushing with no rules except get to the quarterback.
Well, following an announcement that Tennessee has parted ways with Butch Jones, John Gruden has strengthened his grip on the job, at least according to Vegas. Be the name the next head coach for Tennessee, where he worked as a grad assistant for 1 year, according to betonline.ag. He's a plus 180 favorite. The website's owner told CBS that more money has been bet on Gruden than any other candidate combined.
Why do people think Gruden would want to leave Monday Night Football to coach at Tennessee?
I have no idea why you would ever leave for what I've got to believe is probably less money than he's making in Monday Night Football, for the stress of having to deal with a bunch of kids, a football season at a program that's not in the place right now. Unless he's like absolutely bored with what he's doing or wants the challenge of walking in that place, I would not deal with those kids when I can do what I'm doing right now.
And then another name that's been up, Florida, of course, has an opening. I saw where they're starting to vet Chip Kelly for the possibility. He didn't do very well in the NFL, but I think that Florida or others think maybe more suited to the collegiate game. Can you see Chip Kelly at Florida?
I see Chip Kelly coming back because it just reminds you that it's just a constant rotation of the same guys over and over. It's so hard to break into these ranks of being a coach in the NFL or in the college football and at the top end coaches, that you go back to guys like Chip Kelly and not bring in new blood just shows that the depth, the pool out there, guys don't want to take chances. Guys want to go with guys that have played before, have won before, even if their last spot wasn't great.
Well, going back to the NFL, once again, another team's trash is treasure for the New England Patriots. This time it's Martellus Bennett. He played there last year, signed a 3-year deal with the Green Bay Packers, then mysteriously got hurt, has not played since October 21st with the Packers at least. Said he was going to have shoulder surgery, considered retirement after the Packers cut him. Ian Rappaport reported that his agent was telling teams that you don't claim him, he's not going to sign with you. Until Bill Belichick picked up the phone, Bennett signed, he practiced, and he played. Miraculously.
Yeah, I think Bennett's kind of garbage anyways. Obviously, he took a stance against the team and talked about a doctor who's a personal friend and somebody that I worked with for 5 years. So I've gotten more of an emotional response to it than I do probably the normal player. The normal player is going to say, go get your money, guy. Get your money where you can get it, because the NFL will screw you if they get a chance to do it. So I kind of get both sides of the coin. But you talk trash about a guy that I hold pretty close with a lot of respect, and so you're trash to me, Bennett. You're absolute trash to me. Does anybody know what the Patriots paid him yet?
Nope.
It's not going to be enough to make up for what Green Bay's coming for, I promise you that much.
I mean, Boomer Esiason did say he's living a lie, so you're not alone.
Yeah, if we've learned anything from the Bennett brothers, is they're willing to tell whatever lie it takes to try to get their story across.
And then a couple quick notes. College football playoff poll will be revealed tonight at 5 o'clock. And then also at 5 o'clock, you have number 1 Duke playing number 2 Michigan State in men's basketball. Then at 7:30, Kentucky will play Kansas.
And, of course, Boise State basketball back in action on Thursday morning, 11:30 pregame, noon tip-off. AM 1350 will be your spot for the Thursday and Friday games from South Carolina. Don't wait to enjoy a Prater Hater Lager beer. The Ram in Boise and Meridian is serving up the popular Brew by the Pint for a limited time only. Get a limited edition Prater Hater 22-ounce bottle and custom black T-shirt only at the Ram on Broadway in Boise. The Prater Hater, pouring now at the Ram. Up next, what did we learn from our guest today, Mason Hampton, the Boise State starting center, and Jesse Kurtz, who was on the Air Force broadcast. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Listen to the Treasure Valley Prep Rally. It's brought to you by Mountain West Bank. It's Thursdays at 4:45 on Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater. Fruitland is the only local team left playing. Snake River will be the opponent. They'll be at Holt Arena Saturday afternoon. And the Grizzlies coach Ryan Tracy is going to discuss the game with Caves and Prater Thursday, 4:45. So don't miss it. It's sponsored by Mountain West Bank. Love where you bank. And I know we've got some things that we've learned today from our guests, but we also learned that Darren College blocked two kicks in Hawaii.
Yeah, 2005.
One for an extra point and one for a touchdown. And you didn't get credit, Fish, he said, in the box?
I was on ESPN. I found the ESPN recap, and it just said Orlando Scandrick returned a blocked extra point that would have tied the game, and he also had a returned field goal. No, didn't even mention your name.
I know. It was almost part of history. It's the first time that a guy had blocked extra point and a field goal. The same guy blocked both of them. The same guy returned both of them. We had a little bit of a connection that game.
But you know what I think is unfair? How many times does the running back get into the end zone? But you made the block. It won't say in the box score, huge block by Darren College. It'll just say whoever the running back was gets the touchdown. It seems totally unfair, just like in this case as well.
Bob, this is my life. This is what I go through. We're just the guys behind the guys that are really getting the credit. But, you know, we screw up. Don't worry. Your name's going to be right at the top page. It'll be above the fold. Don't worry.
Holding call, right?
Exactly. You're the guy last night or, you know, whatever for the Dallas Cowboys. Don't worry. His name made the top fold before for those six sacks.
Well, speaking of offensive linemen, we got to catch up with Mason Hampton, the center for Boise State. We asked him how the offensive line has handled the two-quarterback system that the Broncos have employed.
It's handled real well. You know, we don't know when they're coming in or coming out. So we just get into the huddle, see who's there. Sometimes Montel's in and he's not playing quarterback. Or sometimes Brendan and he's not playing quarterback. So we have trust in both those guys that they're going to go out and get it done.
And when you look at the game, they've really made it seem seamless when they have subs come in. But it's kind of like running backs, receivers, tight ends. I mean, you don't know who's going to be in on any given play on those positions either.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the most interesting things in me in the whole thing. Yeah, usually as a player, I don't really know who's in a running back. I'll see them when they come in with the, you know, whatever group or personnel, or you know certain guys run certain plays. But for the center not to know, it's just different. Having two different dudes' hands under there and trying to work with those guys through all that stuff, it's a totally different experience. My hat's off to him. He's had a great year. The lack of problems at center quarterback exchange, which can be absolutely detrimental to a game, he's found a way to get through it.
We also got to talk to Jesse Kurtz. He's the color commentator for Air Force. Everyone in Boise knows, of course, the Falcons have defeated the Broncos the last 3 years. Falcons struggling a little bit this year. They're 4-6. So we asked Jesse what has to happen for the Falcons if they need to beat the Broncos for the fourth straight time.
If Air Force has any shot to win in Boise on Saturday night, they're going to have to do something similar. They're going to have 7, 8-minute, 9, 10-minute drives. Those happened against Colorado State and Nevada, and it led to holding the ball for 42 minutes. If they're able to replicate something like that, run, you know, in the neighborhood of 90 plays, which is asking a lot, but this is the team that's done it in back-to-back games, the last two wins, I think that would be the recipe for keeping the game close and maybe having a shot at the end.
And, I mean, I look at the numbers for Air Force's defense, something you mentioned during the interview. They're giving up 6 yards a carry on the ground, and that's for 235 yards a game. So they have been porous on defense. Their defense is going to be, I think, they're going to have to hold the ball, like he says, and make it so that Boise State's playmakers are standing over next to Brian Harsin and not on the field.
Yeah, they've got to do the exact same thing they did last year. We looked at it from last year. For every 1 minute Boise State had the ball, Air Force had it for over 2 minutes. They've got to have drives like that. They've got to make a couple things happen on special teams, because if Boise State's offense is out there, Air Force has too many injuries, is too young at that position, it will be their Achilles heel this game. So their offense has to win this game for them.
Coming up tonight at 5 o'clock, we've got the college football playoff. Bob, real quick, who did you have in your top four?
I had Alabama as my number one. I had Miami as my number two. My number three went to Oklahoma. My number four went to Clemson.
Do you think the Bulldogs will come in five, or do you think they're going to fall farther than that?
I think they're going to fall farther than that. I'll be interested to see if they stay ahead of Auburn. I don't think they will. Was thinking about, you know, maybe seeing them in the national championship. I still think if they win out, they're going to find their way back to the top four, because if they win out, they'll have a win over Kentucky, which, so what? Win over Georgia Tech, they'll beat either Auburn or Alabama. So I think with one loss, if they bounce back and they be the SEC champs, I think they'll find their way back into the four.
Yeah, I've got to agree. Our top four are exactly the same. I think the interesting ones are going to be obviously Oklahoma and just the things that can happen kind of towards that bottom, that 4 or 5 position on who's going to come in. If teams can remain undefeated, it's going to be an interesting last couple of weeks for sure.
I think we only have about 7 teams, maybe 8, that really still have a shot at it. And there are certain teams, I think, right now that, I don't want to say control their own destiny, but if Alabama stays undefeated and wins, they're going to be in. If Miami goes undefeated, you know, wins the ACC, and they'll be in. Now, Clemson, I think, can do the same thing. But again, Clemson and Miami will have to play. So I think only one of those teams is probably getting in, unless a lot of other teams lose random games between now and then. I think the ACC is probably only going to get one.
Yeah, the only way that survives, the only way something happens is I see if Clemson beats Miami, Miami becomes the one lost team with the number, you know, win over Notre Dame, number five. They could come in, but other things are going to have to happen below them. People are going to have to lose for them to remain in. I think that December 2nd game, obviously the most interesting game probably left in college football on the schedule that I see right now in front of me in the regular season.
Jeff Cave's in studio. He and Mike Prater getting ready to take over their part of Idaho Sports Talk in a matter of minutes. Jeff, what do you have going today?
You know, we got the Coolidge. Hey, Coolidge, did they tell you you're going to stay till 6 o'clock today as a bonus?
They hadn't mentioned that, but I guess we could probably make it happen. I'm going to want double.
Well, you may actually like this conversation because you've got the better experience, but, you know, Prater's a Heisman Trophy voter, and he has been for a long time. Bob, have you ever done it?
I've never voted on that one, no. I voted on some other things, but not the Heisman Trophy.
Okay, so in college, you've met a lot of Heisman Trophy guys and seen them in the NFL. They come in with a lot of expectations, and most often it really doesn't ultimately work out. I mean, they don't work into all pro players. There's a lot of pressure on them. Don't you think there's a bigger target on those guys' backs?
Absolutely. They're coming in with that status. You're a guy that's got that hanging over your head. And it obviously usually happens at the quarterback position. It's a guy who's put in a stressful position. One of the best Heisman players I ever played with was obviously Charles Woodson. Won the Heisman as a defensive player and came in and found a way to get himself into a gold jacket. But they seem few and far between. Most of those guys find a way to peter out. Either the pressure's too high or they're put in a situation where they're put on a team that they can't win at.
So that's going to be my point. I think we need to change the way we vote for the Heisman. We need to go to a committee, and they need to study position tape. Because one of the most successful examples of a Heisman is when they got it right. They got it right with it. I think he's doing some two-way stuff. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, he
was a
few.
Tremendous football player. And there's a lot of great football players that aren't quarterbacks and running backs, but they don't have the time to analyze it. So we'll talk about that and see if we can't get it figured out. With a big college football day ahead of us, the poll won't come out till later this evening, so it's not at 5 o'clock today. It's in between the basketball
games. Okay,
game.
So it's going to be more like probably 6:30, somewhere in there probably?
I don't know when the basketball game is.
Basketball
maybe closer
tips
to 7.
At 5, so maybe closer to 7. Between the games, not at halftime?
I think it's between.
Then it probably will be 7 o'clock then tonight. They probably want to keep people all night on ESPN. Watch the basketball game, see the football rankings, and then go back to the basketball game.
Drag it out as long as you can.
Darren, a pleasure. Great insight today. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Me too.
We'll be back tomorrow. Chris is still in South Carolina. He'll check in from there, give us a preview of the Boise State Tournament. Caves and Prater coming up next. Keep it tuned right here to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.